Good morning and welcome to the Magellan Show. It is Thursday, the 12th day of November, 2015. I am your host, Magellan. Thanks so much for being a part of our broadcast today. Coming to you across the United States, Canada, and around the world. We appreciate your listening to the show, as we always do, and we want to remind you that you can check out all that we're doing on our website, www.magellanshow.com. There you will find all of the latest articles, news, making headlines, as well as our podcast on demand. You can click on the links and listen in that way. So a definite resource for you. We also want to thank some other websites that are getting the word out about our show. We want to thank iqdcalls.com for posting our shows, as well as other websites doing the same, like podbay.fm and others, where you can get the link and listen in to the show on demand at a time that's most convenient for you, day or night. We're on iTunes, so if you've got the iTunes app downloaded, subscribe to our podcast for free. That's right, you can subscribe for free. Type in the keywords, Magellan Show. If you want to get in touch with us, ask a question, a comment, whatever it may be, I try to respond to all of your emails as soon as I can, and you can just go to our email address and get in touch, contact@magellanshow.com. Again, that's contact@magellanshow.com. Our live number is 646-929-0709. Again, 646-929-0709. We have a playback number, so if you want to listen to the playback, it's area code 712-775-7039. The access code is 327-756-POUND. Want to get into the news today, as we do every time we're on our broadcast. Just a tremendous amount of news. And we're going to talk about a few things, one being political correctness and how this political correctness has taken the nation by storm and gotten out of control. And a good example of that is what has been happening in the state of Missouri. Now, it doesn't stop there, but we know that quite a few things have been happening, especially on campus there at the university. We're going to discuss it today and try to get some insights, because I really believe that if we do not take notice of these things that are happening, that we will gradually, and actually picking up in momentum, we will get to the point to where we will be persecuted for free speech. That's right, free speech. It's all hanging in the balance. So I want to look at an article, just for those of you who may not be up to date on everything. I want to just go over some of these headlines, just to give you an idea, again, as to where we're at. And so what happened was the university there, this is in Columbia, Missouri, the University of Missouri, there were some outcries that should step down. Now, we know that he did step down, and as well as the chancellor, I believe. But what had happened was is that there were some things at that university. Now, some would call this radical expression or freedom of expression. We're not talking about violence necessarily, but radical free speech. Now, in no way, do we condone, speech that is that is hate driven and truly, I'm not saying that there should not have been some action that took place, because what had happened was that there had been, from my understanding of the news article, that there had been a swastika that had been written on one of the walls, and I won't go into further detail on that, but it was something that obviously was just a hateful thing to put anywhere. But the means by which they removed this president, because mind you, the president did not in any way carry out this type of action. This was done by one of the students, and we don't know for sure if they could even prove, you know, which student actually did this. Okay, and so there were a few other things as well, but we're not talking about violent behavior, but there were definitely some things that were objectionable that were done by the students, but it was more of just a radical expression of ideas. But again, you know, this is something that happens in universities. I mean, you go into a university right now, and if you are a Christian, get ready to be mocked, ridiculed, and told that you are stupid and that you do not have the right way of thinking. Absolutely. You will be told that by your university professors. That's why many times you have young people, 17, 18, 19 years old, that are going into the university for the first time, who maybe do not have a solid footing on their Christian beliefs. And when they go into those university atmospheres and settings, they walk out of the university as an agnostic or atheist because of this type of indoctrination. They don't have a strong footing, and so they hear someone that pontificates and someone that lectures with large vocabulary words, and they demean and degrade the Christian faith. They absolutely do. And as bad as it is, as bad as that is, the way that they ridicule Christians and put them down, not just in general the religion, that's bad enough, but to demean and to degrade the adherents of the Christian religion, of Christianity. And that is over the top, but it still happens. And many times the response of Christians is this, my friend: well, you know, that's a secular university, and at a secular university you're going to have secular ideas, and though we do not agree with them, and though we look down at that kind of attitude, we know that it is what it is, and that's why many times, you know, you'll find Christian kids that'll be going to a Christian college, or at the very least, if they're going to a secular college, that they will do their best to try to find those instructors that are more in line with their belief system, or at least don't trample on their beliefs. Look, I remember when I went to college, and I did not attend a Christian college, and one of the reasons for that, well, I mean, I did have a Christian education all the way through school, and so I'm very thankful for that, that I did, having been one of the few in my age group to have gone through home study and through homeschooling, which I think is not just an alternative, but a wonderful way to educate your kids, and an amazing way. But when I went to college, you know, it was not a Christian university. You know, it was a local community college, and then later, the university. But you would talk to people, and they would tell you, okay, you need to watch out. This professor is not just an atheist, but he's very aggressive in his lecturing towards Christians. So you may want to watch out for that. So, you know, you would begin to kind of share with one another, okay, watch out for this professor, watch out for that professor. And you dealt with it. You dealt with it, okay? So we become used to being persecuted. Look, I think that's the thing that is so just out of control here, is that it is the Christian population that really takes and has to endure all of this mess. And we have become some of the most tolerant of anyone. But then there comes this new movement to where if anything offends them, they're going to take radical action. So let me get back on the story here of the University of Missouri. So there have been some activities at the University of Missouri that really have been inappropriate, obviously, not violent behavior, but certainly speech and an attitude that has been anti-Semitic, and that's wrong, and no one's saying that it's not. But the way that they ousted this president, I don't believe that it was the right approach. See, here's what's happening. Let me get you up to speed. So one person said, you know, one person went on hunger strike, and the football team said, we're not going to play any more ball games, because they knew that's a big deal, you know. And so eventually they were put under pressure, the university president was put under pressure and stepped down. Okay, but it's the process by which this happened. So what happened next? What happened next? So you had some freelance journalists and various journalists, and I posted this. Guys, I posted this on MagellanShow.com and on our Twitter feed at RealMagellan. So what happened next, I think, is where it gets really crazy, is that as you would have various journalists that would come in following the story, you would have these threatening mobs that were really trying to trample on those who were just expressing their First Amendment rights. And get this, you know, using intimidation tactics so that folks could not cover the story. The headline here, a photographer was threatened with mob violence by a professor at Missouri University after he tried to assert his First Amendment rights against safe space authoritarians who use these tactics to shut down free speech. The incident happened in the aftermath of yesterday's resignation of University of Missouri President Tim Wolf, who stepped down after failing to acquiesce to a list of demands from students that include that he acknowledge his... Now, here's the other thing. So we in no way are supporting or saying that some of the things that happened on that campus were right. Okay, no one is approving of graffiti or speech that would, you know, demean someone else. But at the same time, we have to understand that this, these are the same universities that will rip Christians and their ways of thinking to shreds. But the liberal professors and students have taken it so far. And what they're wanting to do and what they did was that they didn't go through the process of pressuring the university and calling for the, you know, for the board of trustees or whoever it is that would make these decisions on letting a professor or a president go, but they took it on themselves. But it wasn't just enough for them to have him step down. Oh no, no, that they in essence put a list of demands. So this has almost become like a sense of blackmail or whatever that says, okay, you have to, and one of those was that he has to acknowledge his quote-unquote white privilege. And after students and professors formed a human shield to try to block reporters from covering the story, photographer Mark Schellerbecker attempted to get an interview with some of the demonstrators to see, okay, what's in your head? You know, what do you want to talk about? In the end of the video, you can check out this video on MagellanShow.com. The end of the video shows a woman who was later identified as Melissa Click, an assistant professor of mass media, grabbed Schellerbecker's camera before demanding that he leave. And she yells the following quote, "Hey, who wants to help me get this reporter out of here? I need some muscle over here." I mean, we're talking about sickos. This PC police, so to speak, the politically correct police, has launched a form of jihad against free speech. Look, none of us is supporting what went on at the university and the kind of speech that and graffiti and everything else that was going on at the university. But the reaction is what I'm referring to, where they're using this as an opportunity to blackmail a president, to make demands, to have him demean his own race by saying that he is that he is one that has, as they say, used his white privilege. And it just goes on from there. You know, it's like, you know, where does this end? And so now they can't even cover the story because of these students that are trying to block, it. You know, this is where we're at. And so our universities now, and it's not just in the University of Missouri, but we're also finding out that there's some other universities that are having similar incidents. And Yale, exactly, during which Professor Nicholas Christakis was besieged by students after he sent an email criticizing their efforts to censor offensive Halloween costumes. The mob showed in this video, and it's also posted here on MagellanShow.com, that they used intimidation tactics as well. So they're saying, you can't express your ideas, professor, because of thus and so. And here he's just saying, look, here are some students right now that are trying to censor. It's all about blocking ideas, but only certain ideas. And that is where the problem lies. Look, I mean, hey, I don't like Halloween, I'll be honest with you. I'm always glad when it's passed. But you've got some students here that were attempting to censor certain Halloween costumes that they found offensive. And I'm sure that those ones that they found offensive probably had to do with, it probably offended some obscure religion. You know, I'm sure it was not an offense to Christianity anyway. But that's where we're at. You know, or maybe you know, it was a Halloween costume that offended some left-wing liberal politician. Who knows? So, free speech, and this is just examples of how our young people are being really brainwashed by you know, more than ever before. You see, before, you know, there's always been, and we're going to talk about a lot of things today, but I just want to spend some time on this. There's always been an exchange of radical secular ideas on university campuses. This is nothing new. It's really not. But I think the thing that we're seeing here, it's not just where you're having Christians who are being targeted at these universities because, you know, they're Christian, they're conservative, but it's going even much further now to where you're having more communist ideas. Why is that? Because the communists and the socialists are the ones who are getting hired at these universities. And why is this so important? Why is this so important? It's important that we recognize this because our young people who are raised in church and they're entertained by their youth pastors who just entertain them, and they don't have, many of them do not have a strong footing in their belief system. I mean, that's where we're at. They go to the university and they gather Marxist ideas. And then you have a new wave, a new generation of people that abhor Christianity, that hate Christianity, and that really want to promote this Marxist type way of doing things in the country. This is the exact reason. This is the exact reason why candidates like Bernie Sanders are doing so well. Even Hillary Clinton, for that matter, she disguises it a little bit more. Bernie Sanders is more like in your face. Hey, it's the Brooklyn way, you know. You know, you're more direct about things. No offense to those of you that live in Brooklyn. I want to know what this guy's thinking, right? I don't want him to, you know, to try to conceal it. We know what Bernie is thinking. He says, hey, I am a democratic socialist. We know that socialism, just after a while, leads into communism. It always does. It may have a new branding. It may have a little different flair, but it's still the same old ideology that goes back. See, in the book of Ecclesiastes, it says that there's really, and I'm just paraphrasing this here, but it says there's really nothing new under the sun. And so true it is. It's just a rehashing. I don't care if it's religion. You take religion, for example. You take Hinduism, an ancient religion, and it's still in existence, but it has been repackaged into the New Age movement. And you take Marxism and some of all the other isms and schisms and so forth that have been prevalent throughout various nations over the past century or so and several decades, and it just repackages into into something different, a new brand that may be starting out as political correctness, et cetera. And so this is where we're at today. Now, for those of you that are just joining us, this is the Magellan Show, where we express ourselves, where we express ideas and talk about what is happening in our country and how our country really needs to wake up, because this generation, the millennials, the generation, these young people, that if we're not careful, we're going to see such a shift in ideas. And look, many of these young people that are going to these universities now, many of them, after they get out, can't even get a job. I mean, that's the truth. They can't even get a job anymore. And that's the cold, hard fact. But hey, that's exactly what their brainwashers, those that are brainwashing them, want. They want to take them through the university system that has become more radicalized than their parents even realize. So they gather these Marxist ideas and these radical ideas as they're getting their bachelor's degree in philosophy or humanities or whatever they may be getting. And, you know, and in doing so, you know, they're lucky if they can get a job. Or if they do get a job, they get paid, what, 10 cents more in the hour because they've got that degree. So then they don't know what to do because they're like, well, I went through this and now I don't have a job. I can't get employed. So then they look to the government for help. Well, what else do they expect? This is the movement, you know, and this is, you know, they've got it. The system has it all figured out. They do. And after it's all said and done, young person, the joke's going to be on you. Wake up. It's time to wake up, and it's time to get fresh ideas that, well, they're really not new ideas, but fresh ideas that say, hey, liberty means everything. Now, just to be completely fair, there are those that have a sense of mental clarity and are standing up for free speech, for liberty, for freedom of expression. But what's happening is that the few are speaking for the many, because the many or the majority are silent. They are silent. They don't do anything. They're happy in their state of complacency. Is that where you want to be? Are you content just going along about your daily lives, seeing your country fall apart, seeing your children and your grandchildren brainwashed by these ideas? You know, if I had, I don't have children, but if I had college-age children, I would certainly think twice before I would encourage them to even go to university. I mean, seriously. You say, oh, Magellan, are you against higher education? No, not at all. As a matter of fact, you know, I gathered a lot of my education through distance learning, and I think it's a wonderful format. Many people are doing that. So I think that's a great way if you want to pursue a degree. And I'm not saying that you can't go to a campus, but things are changing. Not only that, and I think this was brought out so well within the debates on Tuesday night. And how did you catch the debates? If you didn't, you missed out. And you need to go online and watch the debates. Get on YouTube, find it. It was an incredible night. And as we're kind of shifting ideas here, it was an incredible night of debates. And I'm going to share some of my thoughts on the debates because it was very good. Fox Business Network did a great job. They really did. It was incredibly fair. And I know some of you are saying, oh, Magellan, you're just one of those Fox people. No, look, I know sometimes Fox doesn't always get it right. But they were so fair. And to prove that, as I was looking online, all of the candidates had pretty much the exact same amount of time. Well, I know there were some of them tried to interrupt, but the point is that all of them had pretty much the same amount of time that was divvied up. You know, each one got about 11, 12, 13 minutes for each one. And so it was very fair, very, very evened out. There were two debates. There was the early debate where you had the candidates that were not doing quite so well in the polls. And I'll talk about that for starters. And then I'll bring out a point on the second debate that was made in terms of, well, just a whole lot of things that were interesting. But in the first debate, you had former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum. You had former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. You had the Governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal. And you also had Governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie. Chris Christie, I thought, did a phenomenal job. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not back in on the main stage for the primetime debates coming up in December, December 15th, when they have the next Republican presidential debate. But he did a tremendous job. He stayed on message. Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, I thought was way too aggressive towards Christie and some of the other candidates, as well as Mike Huckabee. I thought he was just too aggressive. It made him look desperate. He did not look like a statesman at all. And to me, I think that it did not work well for Bobby Jindal. But I think it was just kind of like his Hail Mary pass, so to speak. I think he was just doing whatever he could to try to stay alive. And I think it backfired on him miserably. And I think that it helped Governor Christie. He stayed on message, Christie did, and he kept the fight towards Hillary Clinton and how he was looking towards the general election. I was very impressed with Chris Christie, and I haven't even been that big of a Christie supporter, but I have to say, even though he wouldn't be my number one candidate, honestly, his debate performance was quite impressive. But moving now to the main debate, which was more of a primetime slot. And I'll say this, that Marco Rubio is not one of my favorite candidates either, but he did make a very good point, as he's quite a very skilled debater, about the university system and how you've got these young people that are going to universities that don't even have a job, and that many have unnecessarily so condemned trade schools, trades like welding and other types of plumbing, et cetera, things that you learn and you can make a heck of a lot of money doing. So I thought it was very good what he brought out, but just looking at this from a broader perspective, the fact that they had an even amount of time to express their ideas, all eight candidates on the main debate stage floor, I thought it was really great. I thought Rand Paul, and many of you know that I have spoken favorably about Rand Paul for a long time, even before any of these debates got started. One of the things that was frustrating me with Rand was the fact that he wasn't really breaking out. Now, I can't blame him entirely for that, because part of it has been the debate panels previous to the Fox Business News debate that really didn't give him a fair shake. And didn't give him time to express his ideas, but I thought he did very well in this past debate, articulated his viewpoints in a most excellent way, and I believe that if it hasn't happened already, that he's going to get a lot more financial support. I believe you're going to see and hear a lot more from Rand Paul, and when the polling numbers, and I would imagine that we're going to get some polling numbers probably today, tomorrow at the very latest, as a result of the Tuesday night debates. I think you're going to see Rand Paul move up. I really do. Now, there are going to be others that are going to move up. Some are going to maintain. Some are going to move back a little bit. I thought Governor Kasich from Ohio did a terrible job, tacky in the way that he handled things. And, there may be some that just really support the guy, but I thought that he did a terrible job. I really do. Jeb Bush, he still had a little bit of a desperate kind of a sense of desperation there. Didn't manifest itself in the same way as, say, Kasich. But I really believe that Jeb Bush, I think he has a frustration because he feels a sense of entitlement. Jeb Bush, the brother of former President George W. Bush, his brother, and also his dad, remember, was also the former president, George H. W. Bush, senior. And so he feels like, okay, I have a sense of entitlement. I'm a Bush. I should be doing better in the polls. He's been sort of the establishment candidate. So who's taking up all of that acclaim and attention right now? Well, mainly Marco Rubio, because he tends to attract the establishment, and a little bit with Carly Fiorina as well, but certainly Rubio is taking a lot of that that Bush support, that was that establishment traditional Republican support, to the dismay of Jeb, and you can see his frustration. I mean, you know, and I can't help feel sorry for him a little bit, even though I am totally not a supporter of Jeb Bush. You know, I mean, it must feel, you know, like, okay, my brother was president, my dad is president, but look, this is not a monarchy. This is not, you know, I mean, this is not a kingdom where it goes to him next, okay? I mean, be happy. Look, you were the governor of the great state of Florida, you know, but get over it and move on. I mean, hey, he has every right to stay in the race, and maybe he'll get a cabinet position as a result of one of the other candidates from winning. We don't know, and we'll just have to wait and see. Now, some of you may be huge Jeb Bush supporters, and that's fine. That's the great thing about the Magellan Show. We express ideas, freedom of speech, freedom of ideas, you know, and that's the great part about it. So we'll see. You know, we have to look at the substance, and it was a substantive debate. Donald Trump, of course, you know, he threw a few of his traditional Donald Trump jabs and, you know, a few sarcastic remarks here and there. But all in all, he remained a little bit more guarded. He was a bit more polite. And I thought one of the funny moments, one of the exchanges when I believe it was Kasich, Governor Kasich was talking and trying to dominate the floor, that Trump said, let Jeb speak. And Jeb was just laughing. I think he was amused at Donald. He said, well, thank you, Donald, for giving me the opportunity to speak at the debates tonight. You know, so it was a funny moment. Trump did well, and I think he really reached out to his base. What really took Trump into you see, and this is the smart thing about Trump. Whether you are a Trump supporter or not, you have to look at all these candidates, because they each one of them did well, and they appealed to their base. So what was it originally that propelled or that took Donald Trump to the level of prominence that he's at and has enjoyed for the last several months in this political race? What was it? It was his position on illegal immigration. That's what got him such high polling numbers. And so what did he do? He got radical Tuesday night. Yes, he talked a little bit about some other issues, but he stayed on the Trump message, because he kind of had pulled back a little bit from it, a little bit. And he hit that issue hard and heavy about the wall. He talked about how we need to have legal immigration, and he encouraged that. But he condemned illegal immigration and also those that are here illegally. Now, you had Kasich and some of the other ones and Rubio and Jeb that were trying to say, you know, get in reality, how can you deport 11 million, maybe more, we don't know the numbers, illegal immigrants. But Trump did not back down. And if you watched the debate, you saw that. And so he appealed to his base, and that's why you will see him at the very least maintain his polling numbers, but probably will see them advance as a result of that kind of attitude. He said, no, I will do that. We will do this, and we will get our economy back, and we will make, as he says, America great again. Now, the only other candidate on the stage that had that same type of wording was Texas Senator Ted Cruz. And I've always said, and I've always thought that guarantee it, nobody knows, but that Ted Cruz and Trump could easily become running mates, because ideologically, they have a lot of things in common, and they're they tend to be strict constitutionalists. So I think you'll see certainly more out of these two candidates. There were others that did pretty well. I thought Carly Fiorina did well. I don't think she knocked it out of the ballpark in any respect, but she did well. And so props to her. I mean, several candidates, won't have time to get into all of them. But let's talk a little bit about Ben Carson. Okay, I think Ben Carson, I think he laid to rest the accusations about the whole West Point thing. He said, look, I was verbally offered this position, even though it wasn't formally documented on paper, you know, and I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that. I think there are bigger pressing issues. Now, let me talk about Ben Carson on some other fronts. And, you know, the West Point thing, I get it. I understand. You know, many times, you know, you are offered scholarships. You are. I mean, I know. I was one time I was offered a scholarship, a top scholarship at a university. For music, for vocal performance, and it was you know, it was something that it was honorable. I mean, it was really an honor to receive that. I was offered that verbally by the dean, and it was kind of a last minute thing. This was like 20 years ago. You know, I was going to get to travel around the world with this group, and big deal. But you know, I made a decision that it was not something I wanted to do. And but it wasn't formally written down on paper or anything. So I understand where, and there's a very interesting story that I won't have time to go into today regarding that whole scholarship thing that I was given. But so I understand where Carson's coming from on that. And so, like I said, again, I give him the benefit of the doubt. But what I want to focus on are some of the other things that Carson is endorsing and supporting. Okay, we all get the fact that Carson is a really nice guy. We understand that. That has been really his base. He really is appealing to those who appreciate his integrity, if you will, and his past integrity. And the fact that he has been, a very intelligent individual who has made a positive impact on our world. I mean, it's great. Hey, you know, he separated conjoined twins. He's done a lot of good things, the Gifted Hands movie and book and all this. We get it. But is that enough to be president? Certainly, you know, anyone can be president if they're at least 35 years of age and they meet, you know, they haven't been a criminal and you know, they're a U.S. born citizen. Yeah, we understand that. And there have been a lot of people that have supported him because Carson's nice. You know, but is that sufficient? And I've been looking and I've been examining Carson lately and, you know, obviously, you know, in the general election, I'll just be straight up about it. I think he would definitely be, and really any of the Republicans would be a breath of fresh air as compared to voting for Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton. And let me just say for the record here that it's not that I am this person that just, you know, is so partisan. It's the fact that the Democratic Party has been hijacked by a bunch of politicians, I should say, that have radical socialist ideas. And they say it now. Democratic socialist? My goodness. So absolutely. Am I leaning Republican now? Yeah, I am, because I don't like the idea. Look at any country. Look what socialism did to it. And you may say, oh, well, you know, every country has a little bit of socialism. Yeah, I understand. But, you know, these programs that they're promising you, the way they're going to get them is they're going to tax you 60, 70, 80, 90% depending on your income. So that's the deal there. But, you know, back on Ben Carson, you know, and I know a lot of you may support Ben, but one of the things that has troubled me about Ben Carson is his support of the TPP. And this is something that Obama has been pushing, and it's a trade agreement. Remember when NAFTA was the North American Free Trade Agreement during the Bill Clinton administration back in the 90s, and a lot of people didn't know what it meant because they were too worried about what was going on with their favorite sports team, or they were too worried about what was going on in their own lives or in their own affairs, or what favorite television show was coming on that week. But NAFTA really hurt the United States of America. And it was at that point, I had friends and I knew people during the 1990s that had unbelievable jobs at some of the most notable American companies like General Motors and others. And they lost their jobs as these plants were moved to Mexico. Okay? And they were moved to other places. So now you have something, and Donald Trump brought it out when he talked about the TPP at the debate. He said this is a 5,600-page set of documents, bigger than Obamacare even, which people have not read. And, you know, and do not realize the implications of even Obamacare and the biometrics and everything else that are going to be pushed as a result of that. But we'll get into that another time. But the TPP, this Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the acronym for it, you know, where you're going to have a lot of nations that are going to join together in the form of trade. And it's going to ease these restrictions in such a way to where it moves us closer and closer, Trans-Pacific Partnership, where it's going to move us closer and closer. It's a trade agreement among 12 Pacific Rim countries, you know, like Malaysia, Singapore, and Mexico, and Chile. And what's this going to do? It's going to destroy our labor union. It's going to destroy what we have in this country. You think that NAFTA screwed this country up? You think that some of the democratically socialistic ideas have destroyed this country? Get ready for the TPP. And it was out for 24 hours, and Dr. Ben Carson, who I'm sure is a really nice guy and someone that you know is a heck of a pediatric neurosurgeon, sure. But after 24 hours, you're telling me that you read 5,600 pages of the TPP? This is going to destroy jobs, okay? It's going to destroy jobs. Especially for the working middle class. And this is the problem. He supports it, among other things. And I'm sure there are other, and I haven't even looked, there are probably other establishment Republicans that do too. Now, would I support Carson over Hillary or Bernie any day? Of course, because there are other ideas that, you know, that I think are, that he's got really great ideas on. But we have to stick to conservative ideas. That's what Rand Paul said in the debate. We have to. We have to be aware of what's going on in this country. You know, before Germany and some of these other countries fell, and history's repeating itself, by the way, with Germany, but, you know, it happened little by little. You go out on the street and you ask people, what is the TPP? And they'll be like, well, isn't that that tent that, that Native Americans used to live in, you know, back in the day. I mean, seriously, this is how, it's not that our society isn't intelligent, because we have a very intelligent society. We memorize what we want to memorize. We follow what we want to follow, you know, but we keep up more with the Kardashians. We keep up more with what is going on in pop culture and in sports and in other areas of our life than what we do about some of these agreements. And it is that kind of just lack of interest in our country that is going to be the result of our demise if we don't wake up soon, my friends. 646-929-0709 is our live number. Playback number, area code 712-775-7039. Access code 327-756#. We are talking today on the Magellan Show about freedom and about political correctness and political incorrectness and the candidates and so much more, and how we've got to wake up and we've got to shake ourselves into reality. Guantanamo Bay. Been a lot of controversy surrounding that. Gitmo, as they call it. Now, the White House is hinting at executive action to close Gitmo prison despite Hill resistance. Fox News is carrying this story. We want to take a look at it. We want to get a sense as to what's going on as the White House is opposing this action, showing some resistance. And what you're really seeing here, I mean, even bigger than the whole Gitmo situation, this is, you know, where they would potentially be moved back to the mainland United States. The big issue here is the battle between the executive branch and the legislative branch of government. Now, we know we have the judicial branch as well, which many times does the bidding of the executive branch, especially if they lean a certain way politically. And it's interesting that Ted Cruz, as he was, I believe he's in New Hampshire right now, or he's been in New Hampshire, stopped off at a school and was talking to young people about how laws are made. Many people want to know how laws are made. We don't have a king, or we're not supposed to have a king in this country. We have a president. A little bit different. But suspicions are mounting on Capitol Hill that President Obama could try to use executive action to close the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center, even after Congress this week approved legislation that would keep the facility open. So the president is saying, okay, Congress, you have put together legislation that would keep the facility open, but I'm thinking about just using my executive powers. Now, the president does have the authority to use executive action in certain situations, but not when it makes a mockery out of our legislative branch of government known as the Congress. The defense policy bill approved Tuesday would bar the transfer of Guantanamo inmates or Gitmo inmates to the United States. Obama, despite opposing that provision, plans to sign the bill. But the White House may have a backup plan. Press Secretary Josh Earnest has indicated twice in recent days that Obama could use executive action to get around Congress. I'm going to protect the ability of the president to use his authority to move the country in the direction that he believes it should be headed, and particularly when it comes to an issue like closing the prison at Guantanamo Bay, is what Earnest said after the Senate vote declining to rule out the use of executive action. And there's more to this article. You can read it in its entirety by going to our website, www.magellanshow.com. But this is the state of affairs. this is where we're at right now. As big of a deal as the Guantanamo Bay issue is, I think the bigger story, or at least equally important story, is are we at a point to where Congress is really being shoved to the side, and you are now seeing laws passed through the executive powers. This is where we are at. So we definitely, my friends, need to wake up and just get clearness of mind and continue to elect and send the right kinds of people to Washington. It's not just about, I was talking with a friend of mine not too long ago about the importance of being involved politically, and how that it's not just about the presidential race. Oh, it's very important, and we can't underestimate that at all. But we also need to fully acknowledge that the local races are important. Who is your sheriff? Who is your governor? Who are your representatives in Congress? Those are also very important too, because they can make a powerful difference in what goes on. So we don't want to in any way dismiss the priority of that as well. Interesting article that came out I caught this on Infowars.com. 21 signs that Americans are the unhappiest people on the planet. In America, suicide rates are soaring, the use of antidepressants skyrocketing right now. We know that just among our veterans, some 22 veterans take their lives every day. This is brought out especially in light of Veterans Day, but it's not just those that are veterans of wars, but also veterans of their own internal wars and the things that are going on in our society that become too hard for folks to handle. So for a nation that supposedly has it all, we sure are depressed. In America today, suicide rates are soaring. Antidepressant use is skyrocketing. Virtually every new survey out shows that we are deeply dissatisfied about something. But we live at a time when there are more things to enjoy than ever before. And as the writer of this article says, he says this: when I was growing up, there were only a handful of television channels to choose from, but now there are hundreds. We have more movies than we ever could possibly watch, more books than we could ever possibly read, and the greatest video games ever made are at our fingertips. And with all of the entertainment that surrounds us, you would think that Americans would be happier than ever before. And yet we continue to become even more depressed. Everywhere I go, I see people that look like they have like the life has been completely sucked out of them, drained. And so the question is, why is this happening? The following are 21 signs that Americans are the most unhappy people in the entire world. And I mean, this is, I won't get to all of these because, it's too many, but I would encourage you, go to our Twitter feed at Real Magellan to find this tweet, or go to our website, magellanshow.com, and click on there. But let's look at some of these. A scientific study that was released found that the U.S. adults are becoming less happy over the years. It just goes into some of these. They're becoming increasingly depressed. This was conducted by a study at San Diego University. Back in 1987, 61.1% of all Americans reported being happy at work. Today, 52.3% of all Americans say that they are unhappy at work. A different survey found that 70% of all Americans do not feel engaged or inspired at their jobs. Also, one survey of 50-year-old men in the U.S. found that only 12% of them said that they were very happy. Only 12%. A 50-year-old man said that they would consider themselves very happy. The number of Americans diagnosed with depression increases by about 20% each year, and certainly this is something that that is not getting the attention that it needs, my friends. It's really not. And according to the New York Times, more than 30 million Americans take antidepressants. These are the ones that admit to it. So, I mean, that's roughly 9%, almost 10% of the population. Doctors in the United States write more than 250 million, a quarter of a billion antidepressant prescriptions every single year. The rate of antidepressants use, and I'm just going to spend some time on this. I feel that it's important to do so. Might help someone out there. But the rate of antidepressant use among middle-aged women is far higher than the population as a whole. And it is hard to believe, but right now, one out of every four women in their 40s and 50s is taking an antidepressant medication. Compared to children in Europe, children in the United States are three times more likely to be prescribed antidepressants. In America today, there are 60 million people that abuse alcohol, and there are 22 million people that use illegal drugs. And, you know, you may say, especially those of us that have come from religious backgrounds, oh, well, you know, they, you know, those alcoholics, shame on them, you know, they're just worldly people. And while to a certain extent that may be true, some of them are trying to escape from their problems, and they're doing it in a way that, sadly, is destructive. You know, Americans have the highest rate of illegal drug use on the entire planet. One recent poll found that 71% of Americans are dissatisfied with the direction that things are going in the country. Americans have the highest divorce rate in the world, not just by a little margin, but by a wide margin. Americans have the highest percentage of one-person households on the entire planet. Well, that makes sense when you have the highest divorce rate in the world by a wide margin. 100 years ago, check this out, 4.52 people, for 4.5 people, percentage-wise, were living in the average U.S. household, but now the average U.S. household only consists of about 2.59 people. So household sizes have become much smaller. Isn't this interesting? This is really powerful data here. According to the Pew Research Center, only 51% of all American adults are married. Back in 1960, 72% of all adults were married. The suicide rate in the United States is now the highest that it has been in 25 years. And as I mentioned earlier, shockingly, 22, really not that shocking to tell you the truth, you know, with post-traumatic stress on the rise, et cetera, but 22 military veterans kill themselves every day by means of suicide. And the suicide rate for Americans between the ages of 35 and 64 rose by close to 30% between 1999 and 2010. The number of Americans that are killed by suicide now exceeds the number of Americans that die as a result of an automobile accident every single year. That is huge. And finally, the rate of suicide is highest during the holidays, during the Christmas holidays that come at the end of the year. And about 45% of all Americans say that they dread the Christmas season. And this is linked to Psychology Today. And I just, as much time as I spent on this, I just covered the high points. If you go to this article, it'll go into each one of these bullet points that I spoke on and mentioned. There's more information and more detailed information, I should say, below each bullet point. So you might want to check out that article. I believe it's very telling, and I think it shows us where we're at as a nation, how we're falling apart from the inside out, I mean, in every which way. We definitely need to get our priorities right, you know, because, you know, our country needs prayer. the American people need prayer. We need to seek God's face. We need to seek Him and to put our trust in Him. We're going to take a look at some economic news here in just a moment before we wrap up the program. Bible Gateway was trending on Twitter today, and so I noticed one of the scriptures that was trending, and I decided to post it here on MagellanShow.com. Psalm 107, verses 29 and 30, it says it like this: He calms the storm so that its waves are still. Then they are glad because they are quiet. So He guides them to their desired haven. Psalm 107, verses 29 and 30. Powerful words of Scripture from the Word of Almighty God. You know, the blessed assurance that we can find through Jesus Christ is found in the pages of the Bible. And it's always refreshing to be able to glean understanding and knowledge and wisdom and hope from the Word of Almighty God. Let's take a look at the markets right now and see where we're at there. In New York, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 126 points. Hasn't been the greatest week for the stock exchange. The NASDAQ is down 13. The S&P 500 down 10 points. I think we're going to see, and I hope I'm wrong, a gradual decline in the stock market. I don't believe it's going to be just this one day where you have just this meltdown, although that could very well happen, but a gradual decline. What's happening with Bitcoin? This is many of you understand Bitcoin, but it is a cryptocurrency, the leading cryptocurrency that is not tied to any central banking system. And how's it trading today? One Bitcoin, 325.6. So about $325 will get you one Bitcoin. And, you know, amazing cryptocurrency that can digitally be moved anywhere in the world with minimal microscopic fees. So really a lot better than some of the other ways of moving money or other types of merchants. Just a great independent way. It hasn't been without its own set of problems. No, we definitely acknowledge that. But it seems like the Bitcoin's really shaken a lot of that stuff to the side, a lot of these issues that held it back. And I think that you're really seeing good, steady, solid growth out of Bitcoin now. And many times these things take time. But I think we're seeing it mature in the right way. Now, what's the precious metals market doing this morning? Gold is down 8 to 1080. Silver is down 9 cents to 1425. Silver really looking good, I got to tell you. That's what I think. Platinum is down 8 to 877. And palladium is 564, down 16. The euro has been down significantly as compared to the U.S. dollar. On Tuesday, we were looking at the European euro. $1.07. We're going to see if we can get a readout on the euro this morning. And look at that exchange rate right now. Up just a little bit. $1.08, but still dramatically and significantly lower than what it had been. Looking at other currencies, the Central Bank of Iraq, their website, CBI.IQ, indicative rates for this 12th day of November 2015, reading out here, 1166 to the U.S. dollar, 1249 to the euro, 1767 to the Great British pound. While we're at it, just talking about Iraq, you know, a lot of these markets
And I want to say, you know, we don't know how all this is going to end up. We haven't even had, we didn't get a chance to talk about China and Russia today. I know they're really big trending stories in the news right now, as they flex their political and military muscles, so to speak. But it makes you wonder, you know, how will Iraq end up as a result of what's going on with the invitation that they extended to Russia to get involved? Because, well, we pulled out of Iraq in a pretty dramatic and abrupt way. So it again makes me wonder, you know, how Russia will respond, and will that help the nation of Iraq? We know that there's oil there, there's gas there. Many have been hoping and praying that Iraq would move in a positive direction, both economically and along with their security as well. It remains to be seen, but, you know, we'll be watching reports from various leaders in Iraq. We follow Dr. Haider al-Abadi on Twitter, and we're looking at the economic conditions in Iraq, because we know that so many are invested in Iraq in a big way, either through its currency or through the oil, the natural gas. You have some big heavy hitters there. Lots of news we could still cover today, but we're going to go ahead and wrap up our program. We want to thank you for joining us for this edition of The Magellan Show. Our playback number is 712-775-7039, access code 327-756-pound. I want to say that you can certainly get in touch with us and let us know what you think about our program. If you have ideas or suggestions for special guests, email us, contact@magellanshow.com. Again, that's contact@magellanshow.com. Follow us on social media @RealMagellan, www.magellanshow.com. We want to thank IGDCalls.com for posting our programs, podbay.fm, as well as others. We're on iTunes as well, so lots of ways to connect with us. Consider donating to our cause. You can go to the website, magellanshow.com, and click on the donate button. A gift, large or small, really helps out, helps us keep going and speaking out on these ideas that are important: freedom, liberty, religious liberty, and so much more. Help us continue on doing what we're doing. On December 1st, we will be having our 500th show. So we want to keep on going. So definitely help us out. I know many of you have been listening to me from the very beginning. And, you know, when you donate to what we're doing, I think sometimes people think, oh, well, you know, if I can't donate, you know, $100 or $50, then I shouldn't donate. Do you realize that you can really help out what we're doing? You know, we want to expand. We want to go FM radio. We want to do a lot of things. Plus, you know, we want to continue to keep the lights on. And, you know, you can certainly become a sponsor if you have a business or whatever. But maybe you just want to give, you know, $5, $10, $15, $20. You know, it makes a difference when many of you do that. So consider doing that. Would you? www.magellanshow.com. Click on the donate button. We do appreciate that. Well, I'm going to get out of here. I appreciate your listening to the show, as I always do. We will be back here on Tuesday. This weekend will be the Democratic debate. Hillary Clinton, O'Malley, and Bernie Sanders will be going at it this Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central this Saturday night. You might want to catch that and see what they're doing. We're here Tuesdays and Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 10 Central, for The Magellan Show. Thanks so much for listening. God bless all of you. Have a great day. This is Magellan. Bye-bye for now.